This is your World War III update. Today on the channel, I want to talk about Day X, what it is, when it is going to happen, why it is inevitable, and how you can prepare for it. Day X is essentially, for you, it's going to be when the lights go out and they just don't come back on. This is going to be the terminal endpoint of all of the various polycrises that we see. It's going to be the culmination of all hostilities. It's going to be that tipping point when we realize that all of these proxy wars and regional conflicts that we're seeing around the world are all interconnected and interlinked, and all wars are in fact one war. You might be asking yourself, why is Vladimir Putin taking so long? Why is he so tolerant of the West's continued encroachment, even into his country, with F-16s? Now Lindsey Graham has confirmed those F-16s, like yours truly said months ago, will be flown by retirees who watch Top Gun on repeat. Why is Vladimir Putin so patient, and why has he deferred retaliation for so long? He's currently being invaded by Ukrainian forces, backed by nearly every NATO implement that can be thrown at the situation, with the exception of their most advanced equipment. Why has Iran waited for so long to respond to Israel? I'm going to shut off my phone because this is flipping annoying as all hell. Please, I would wish for the grid to go down right now so I did not get interrupted and then come back on so I can upload this video. Why is Iran waiting? What is Iran waiting for? Iran is waiting for, I'll tell you straight up, they're not waiting to prepare. Psychological warfare is a component of it, but that's secondary, okay? Iran is not preparing to do a retaliatory strike against the Israelis. Iran is preparing for the inevitable massive region-wide conflict that will ensue thereafter. That's what they are preparing for, okay? So Day X is the day when we reach that pivotal point in the conflict when it becomes truly kinetic. Now, in order to understand what Day X is, and this is a conceptual framework myself and a friend of mine designed in order to understand why, to explain, why are countries stockpiling supplies, precious metals, raw materials like China? Why are they stockpiling food, grains, energy, loading up their oil reserves? Why are they divesting from US dollars? Okay, why are the elites divesting? Why is Warren Buffett sitting on more cash than the US Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve? Why are so many elites now preparing for global catastrophe? Why are certain countries, especially within the Commonwealth of UK, Canada, Australia, numerous countries around the world, why are they rolling out these more draconian authoritarian regimens, in order to police social media, police information? Why is there this crackdown and consolidation of media, if not even at the algorithmic level, to control what people say, think, feel, and hear? Why is YouTube severing ties with Russia? And why is Russia throttling YouTube within its own country? Why is the Iron Curtain emerging once again to separate information from East and West? Why is there such a thing called the Great Chinese Digital Firewall? Okay. Why are alliances being strengthened in the shadows? Many people forget something that just happened 2 months ago. That was North Korea and the Russians signing a strategic military partnership that indicated if one was invaded, the other would come to their rescue. Now, that's likely more of a one-way relationship with Russia coming to the aid of North Korea. But right now, you have a situation. Incidentally, 2 months later, you have a situation where Russia is being invaded by what essentially is the collective West. Let's just call it what it is. And North Korea still hasn't joined in the fight yet, but perhaps this is what we're going to see more of in the future. Why are we seeing militarization, mobilization, calls for reinstating drafts in various countries, calls for reinvigorating the military-industrial industry. Why are we seeing a current war being waged, a proxy conflict on the border of Russia, which really isn't a proxy conflict, and it's becoming quickly morphing into a direct war between NATO and Russia. But why are we seeing such restraint on the part of Vladimir Putin in terms of withholding his best weaponry? Why are we seeing the buildup of cyber weapons and zero-day exploits? Why are we seeing the buildup of sleeper cells within various countries and saboteurs? And why are we seeing such a radio silence when it comes to these behind enemy line style asymmetrical attacks that we've yet to truly see in the United States on the scale that you would expect? It's because right when they start, everything is going to go to shit, okay? Why are we seeing these attempts to undermine the social order everywhere around the world? You're seeing attempts to culturally, politically, and economically undermine certain countries, be it Venezuela, be it Bangladesh, Eastern European countries, Serbia. The list goes on. All of these countries are currently in the crosshairs of the proxy conflict. Now, we have to discern red lines and deadlines. What day X is that point when you get checkmated. Okay, it's that, I've heard a metaphor describe it as when a young lion is about to overpower the old male lion, the leader of the pack. This is best represented in something I've brought up on numerous occasions on the channel, which is Thucydides' trap. Now, Thucydides' trap is a concept, and it's very important to understand this. I'm not trying to bamboozle you with fancy $5 words. I'm trying to explain a concept in as simple a terms as possible so that you understand why there is this delay to day X, because once it starts, it's not going to stop. Thucydides' trap is such that an emerging superpower poses a threat to an existing one. This is derived from the Battle of Greece, when I think it was Sparta who anticipated that the Athenians were becoming all too powerful. So in an attempt to stymie their progress, they went to war with them before they could reach that point when they would become insurmountable in terms of their military capability. So right now you have a situation where the Transatlantic Alliance, that's the United States and all of its vassal states, currently is witnessing the emergence of Russia and China, and if you want, you could call it BRICS, okay? And it's not BRICS, there's some overlap as well with that crosses over into Western alliances, countries like India and Brazil, still kind of in a bit of a gray zone. But by and large, you have the emergence of the East as a economic and military powerhouse that is rivaling the established global hegemony that, of course, has been led by the United States for the longest time. And day X is the point in which, and I can give you the pedantic definition, and then I'll try to explain it in simpler terms, not that this is beyond any of my viewers, but I know some people think that we're trying to be pretentious. It's just that I'm trying to provide the most simplest rudimentary understanding of things without it being, you know, overly verbose. The point in which the attritional campaign of the hegemon, that is the United States, the point in which their attempts to undermine our adversaries like Iran and Russia either ceases to be effective and that emerging power breaks away. They reach an escape velocity. So think about the Iranians and their nuclear program. They're approaching an escape velocity. And this accelerates because as we begin to sanction these countries more and more, they start to pair up, okay? And they start to do more trade. And in doing more trade and in alienating more and more countries, we actually accelerate the emergence of that rising power because now they're no longer afraid of the sanctions. China is no longer afraid of the sanctions that we impose on them for conducting trade with Russia and Iran. And it's a very slippery slope. And once you pass across a certain Rubicon, when you cross a certain let-off point, if you will, it reaches a point where it's essentially do or die for the established order. It's existential for the established order. They must intervene. From their point of view, I'm not saying that this is something I espouse. I'm just saying this is what it is. This is human nature. This is the nature of civilizations that war with one another. The United States sees Iran doing uranium enrichment in these deep underground military bunkers, and they know they're about to achieve escape velocity. If Iran is allowed to get nuclear power, you're not going to be able to mess with them anymore. That means that their proportion of global GDP is going to continue to rise at the expense, at least for the people who believe it's an all or none zero sum game, like they do, like some of the fake capitalists at the helm of things in the United States and the globalists. They believe that it's a zero sum game. So if Iran becomes prosperous, then the United States must necessarily suffer. In the same way, they believe that if Russia gets a foothold in Ukraine, that it is going to be existential for Europe and the United States. And the reverse is also true. So it could also be the point in which a lesser power's progress is imperiled by hegemonic pressure and they attack. This means it's existential for them. So it could be existential for Russia because Ukraine, currently the battering ram for NATO, beating on its doorstep. For all we know, Ukraine has nuclear weapons, and these are things that we really need to ask, because you have to ask yourself, how is it possible that Ukraine doesn't have nuclear weapons? They have the Soviet-era scientists. They have the fissionable materials, okay? They probably have the deployment systems. They certainly do now with the F-16, which is why there was such a problem there with the Russians, the umbrage that they took with the West providing Ukraine with the F-16, because it's a platform to carry tactical nuclear weapons. Ukraine is much further along towards a path towards procuring a nuclear weapon or even a dirty bomb than would be the Iranians. Yet there's really no talk about this. I mean, the Ukrainians have nuclear power plants. They even have pretty much the full backing of NATO. Now, that's not to say that NATO wants Ukraine to start a nuclear war. But what it is to say is there's some reason why Vladimir Putin continues with this Tibetan monk-like level of strategic forbearance, which we just simply are not accustomed to seeing. In Iran, they're screwing with people right now. Okay, they're saying, yeah, it's going to come the next 24 hours. They have their various social media appendages putting out different types of tweets and social media content that is suggesting that an attack is imminent in order to psychologically traumatize the population that is living very close to the bunker right now. But the real reason, as I indicated before, is because they are preparing for the aftermath. They know that day X is likely going to be, and this is the thing to understand, when day X happens in Iran, it has extenuating circumstances for the rest of the world, for Russia as well. As soon as shit really hits the fan in the Middle East, look out for what is going to happen in Europe, because that's when things could just explode all over. It's almost like, pardon the metaphors, but it's almost like all of these conflicts are wired up to the same fuse. And once one really blows, and I don't just mean, you know, these skirmishes, and they're not skirmishes. This is a full-on, you know, high-intensity war being fought on the Russian border with Ukraine. This is not to minimize it, but I'm talking about when Putin takes the gloves off. Okay, when he unloads on a city like Kiev, or when he crosses the real red line, the red line that we don't see, the deadline, if you will. We can talk about red lines versus deadlines. The deadline is that point that I'm talking about where it truly becomes an existential tipping point for one of these countries involved in the equation. Okay, and so hence right now you have the East, who is the lion who is emerging and about to challenge the old guard. I'm just mixing and matching metaphors here. About to challenge the old lion. Simba is about to challenge his dad, okay? And there's going to reach a point where he is going, and sometimes this is maybe why male lions eat the cubs, because they know, or perhaps they're not ready to lose their pride just yet. So these are things that it's important to understand, because there's so many questions, you know, like, why is Zelensky still alive? People have a thousand and one theories. You could say, okay, because they want to keep him, because he needs to, you know, represent the downfall of Ukraine. He needs to sign the surrender. He needs to, it would look bad on the global stage, even though they've already essentially viewed him not as the legitimate leader of the country, and they've declared war, at least unofficially, on the country. There's no reason why, especially considering that now Ukraine is coming over the Russian border, that he should be alive. You know, why isn't Russia attacking Kiev? Why does Israel want to start a war with Iran? Like I said before, why are so many technocrats and money managers moving into cash and divesting from the internet? Warren Buffett, divesting from their investments, sorry, Warren Buffett, he divested from Apple, okay? This was his quintessential stock, and he divested from it to a large degree. That's telling you that a big crash is coming. Now, I'm not saying that Buffett is aware of Day X. I think he's more so looking at the obvious economic indicators, okay, the compounding debt, the derelict conditions of a lot of so-called first world cities that we're seeing right now, the culture in decline, the increasing talk of civil unrest, even civil war, the decline in the United States and the transatlantic soft power that they experience around the world. And despite so much money pumped into the military-industrial complex, the dwindling military capability of the United States, which is an obvious thing. Why is it that the United States decided, you know what, we're going to send some nuclear submarines over there? And I'm going to be straight up. A friend of mine, Steve Syros, over at the Freeze Dry Wholesale Company, he notified me of some information a few weeks ago. He said, I'm getting some pretty serious-sized orders here from various government agencies, which are very unusual. He gets these types of orders regularly, but this was an order that was very large, and they wanted it within a very short period of time. And sure enough, we hear about accelerated deployments of naval vessels to the Middle East, including nuclear submarines with dozens of Tomahawk missiles, possibly nuclear tips. So the shit is getting ready to hit the fan. Once 0 day starts, that's it. Okay? The banks don't work. The ATMs don't work. The medicine that you needed to get from the pharmacy, you're not going to get. The grocery, the supply chain. The further you are up the supply chain, the wealthier you are in a lot of cases, okay, and this is why the rich, and if you're rich, if you're a high net worth individual, a centimillionaire, not maybe not even a centimillionaire, a decamillionaire and above, my friend, you need to really consider what proportion of your wealth is in material stuff, because you are going to be the most screwed when it hits the fan. Why? Because you are the furthest up the supply chain. So if you look at a person whose net worth is, you know, of the decamillion, that means over $10 million, the majority of their wealth is going to be in ones and zeros on a screen. Whereas an individual who maybe is living paycheck to paycheck, while they might not have a lot of money, proportionally they have left to lose. Because what they have is on their person. They don't have, you know, massive savings accounts, massive investments. They don't have these deeds and properties from around the world and cryptocurrency and things of that nature. They have what they have. While they still may have less physical material stuff than said rich guy or girl, they have proportionally more of their wealth on their person. Possession is 9/10 of the law. So for all of you richy rich types, and I'm not throwing shade here, I'm just saying, you are incredibly vulnerable right now, because so much of your wealth relies on the various institutions and infrastructure that the grid facilitates. The banks, okay? The grid, the power grid, the police to enforce it, the laws that say that this belongs to you, etc., etc. So you need to be preparing like never before for Day X, because when Day X finally hits, and I know maybe it's a poor choice of words to call it Day X because of, you know, Planet X and all of the other conspiracy bullshit out there. I just call it Day X. I've been calling it the Day Zero for a while. Zero Day is a common terminology in cybersecurity. Day X because there's an X factor there. You don't know what exactly is going to be, is going to push it over the edge. That one domino that has to fall, that checkmate, when there's nowhere to go but to war. Now, there's ways that that can be postponed. Perhaps the United States descends into a civil war. Think about it this way. If the Soviet Union never collapsed, we probably would have went to nuclear war. One side had to lose. And the only way we were able to have that happen in a way that it didn't go radiological is because it imploded. The Soviet Union imploded. I'm not going to get into the reasons as to why it did. But unless we have something like that happen, and the reason why I'm saying more so, leaning more so to the United States, because if that happens in Russia, there's going to be people who do not have these strategic and who are not in a position to see as far ahead as Vladimir Putin is. Vladimir Putin is so high up where he is that he can see things so far away. Somebody who replaces him, say, and maybe doesn't have the certainty that they're going to be in that role for life, like Xi Jinping, like the Ayatollah of Iran, like Kim Jong-un, all of these guys are there for life. They can plan long term. I mean, a lot of them are getting pretty old, but they can still plan much longer than the guy who's scrambling to try to stave off a coup, okay? So if Vladimir Putin gets removed right now, or if he is assassinated, we are going to be in an even worse situation unless they can economically crash the country. And because it's, so long as Russia remains formidable as an economic adversary, the threat is always going to persist, because as long as you can keep your economy right, you can have an endless supply of military. I don't know if you guys ever played like the real-time strategy games, you know, the ones where you build up your economy and then you build up your military. It's the only games I ever really took interest in playing. But one thing is for sure, you can have an unlimited supply of military. Obviously, you need the raw materials and things like that in the real world and the labor, and you got to appease your people, make sure they don't revolt against you. But as long as you have the economy, as long as the money is coming in, you can fight a war into perpetuity. So that is what Russia is tasked with right now. The United States, if we descend into civil war and the United States collapses, the risk there is more of a imperialist slow burn. So maybe that is going to embolden Russia to want to press on a little bit further, okay, and go into Europe a little bit further. Now, if all of this fifth generation stuff fails, like I'm talking about information warfare, that is when the big one is going to happen. Now, right now, we're between a rock and a hard place, an unstoppable object, unstoppable force meeting an immovable object, which is what East and West is at that point. One of those things has to degrade, deteriorate, break down so the other can overcome it. Otherwise, it's a nuclear explosion. So either we have capitulation by the other side, which is never going to happen. It just never happened through all of history. Either we're going to have, and the only way it has happened, with an extreme show of force that imperiled the other side's chances of winning, like what happened in Japan when they realized we don't have the nuke and they dropped the nuke on our civilians, which was crazy when you really think about it. They could have attacked military bases, but that's neither here nor there. They thought that the logic of it was that we got to do it here so we show them that we're crazy. I don't know. Without some X factor, like some force of nature, like there was an earthquake that happened in Syria today. And I was thinking to myself, I know some biblical people are going to be, well, you know, the conspiracy guys are going to be like, oh yeah, that was them with their Harper, you know, weather control bullshit, right? But I was thinking maybe the religious people are probably thinking it was like a divine intervention to try to stop a war. But of course, it was just a freak act of nature. It was just coincidental that it happened when everybody was expecting an Iranian response. But something like that, maybe in the form of a biological, and maybe it was made in a lab, who knows? Something could come along that could just derail everybody's plans for world domination, and that can potentially prevent nuclear war. They're talking about, you know, a level 4 solar flare today, or 4 out of 5 on the scale of severity in terms of the, what do you call it, not the CME, I can't even remember the word, but I've talked about it countless times on the channel. There's too much in my brain today, obviously, talking about this Day X stuff, but you get the point. Geostorm, which is going to cause a potential disruption in the electrical grid and communications and all that stuff. So if we don't see aggressive diplomacy, if we don't see a capitulation by either side, which we're likely not going to see, because as you can see, Vladimir Putin right now has now said that, you know what, we don't even want to negotiate with Kiev anymore. And I mean, that's his harshest response to everything that's going on. Yeah, we're not going to negotiate. I mean, I jokingly said on X that this was one of the most flaccid responses in an attempt by NATO to provocatively arouse Putin. And he just responds by, okay, I guess it means we're not going to negotiate. Doesn't threaten nuclear weapons, doesn't start bombing Kiev haphazardly, although that will come, because today the Ukrainians are just lighting it up in Russia. And my friends, this is why I know it's we've become so desensitized to it, but you need to understand what is happening right now. Russia is being invaded by NATO weapons, and there are no NATO countries right now, not the United States, not Germany, who are attempting to rein in the Ukrainians. They are bombing all throughout, deep into Russia, deep into Moscow, and now on the border, and shit is hitting the fan. Don't let anybody minimize what is happening right now. Imagine there's Russia bros right now trying to minimize this, saying, oh, it's just a couple thousand guys and it's not a big deal. They've only got 500 square kilometers. Apparently it's up to 1,000 square kilometers today, depending on what map you look like. But it is, because just imagine it happened here. Imagine it happened in the United States, where, you know, the Mexicans were coming across the border. Okay, let's not go there. Why did I say that? Imagine, okay, you're the United States, we're Canada. They gave us back our guns and we decide to invade your country. Obviously would be destroyed in like 5 minutes. But let's just theoretically say, you know, we had your back up against the wall. And, you know, or maybe that's not, let's say you tried to invade us and same scenario reversed. And then we started coming across your border. I mean, all I'm trying to say is, if we view it from a more, what's the word I should use? Not ethnocentric, but like a country-centric point of view, we can understand why this is a very big deal to have an army, which is armed to the tits by NATO, inside their country, going from street to street, terrorizing their population. Now, I'm not saying that the Russians didn't do that in Ukraine, but Ukraine supposedly doesn't have nuclear weapons. And that's why we talk about it at all in the first place, okay? Day X. What else is there to say about Day X? Once there is an exhaustion of... Am I still recording here? Why did that shut off? That's interesting. Once there is an exhaustion of all other methods of warfare, be they fifth generation warfare, like I talked about, attempts to undermine, okay, attempts to economically destroy a country via sanctions and embargoes, attempts to trigger a coup d'etat. Once all of these things fail and the proxy wars fail, the only thing left to do, if it's existential for you and your country, is to try to do a preemptive strike. So what happens with Day X is both sides are trying to preempt. Right? So it's like there's that old saying, if you know, and I think it's maybe Vladimir Putin who said this first, I don't know, people often attribute it to him. If you know there's going to be a fight, you throw the first punch. Well, it's really a question of, it's like a draw, you know, when you're the old gunslinger fights, Both sides are trying to preempt one another. So you reach a point as you approach, as we start to exhaust all of these other methods of going to war with each other, and as the conventional stockpiles run out, the incentive to preempt becomes greater and greater. The risk that one country is going to do a preemptive nuclear strike increases and increases. And because Vladimir Putin has seldom pushed back, with the exception of a few phone calls to Lloyd Austin, where they appeared to, pull back a little bit in terms of patrolling the Black Sea with their drones and offering reconnaissance and intelligence to the Ukrainians, there's been very little pushback. And clearly the Russians can see the incremental and very insidious advance of NATO and its forces on its border, which is going to culminate, if they don't do anything, if they don't do something significant soon, it's going to culminate into an overthrow of their country. And before they know it, all of these things that are being coordinated along the front from Finland to the Baltics, all the way down to the different parts of Ukraine where they're currently invading, that's when there's just going to be like a turnkey advance into Russia, a blitzkrieg, and this is what they have to prepare for. So in order to preempt that, they have to use nuclear weapons. Now, the hope is that they're going to preempt it using nuclear weapons in unconventional ways. So perhaps doing a demonstrative strike, perhaps, as I've suggested, that they're going to use a nuclear weapon on their territory to target Ukrainians. Maybe they're just going to block out the whole area. Who knows? But they have to do something at some point, because they know NATO has no reverse gear in this respect. And once the Middle East pops off, there's a very high likelihood that if that situation blows up, then who knows what sort of provocations and false flags are going to ensue in the East when tension is taken away from that. Okay, the same thing you have happening in Taiwan, where China right now is watching the largest, one of the biggest islands, you know, in the world in terms of what is a real island, right, off the coast of their country, one of the largest unsinkable aircraft carriers in the world, currently being infiltrated by the U.S. military. And currently, more and more by the day, we're seeing more red lines overstepped, more military contractors and high-ranking officials within the U.S. government visiting Taiwan. So China, too, who is being very quiet, with the exception of the usual, you know, incursions into Taiwanese airspace, besides that, they've been incredibly quiet. But they, too, are amassing and preparing for Day X. So is North Korea. North Korea is like the definitive Day X prepper. They are just continuing to amass more and more military equipment to build out nuclear weapons, at least on paper, even faster than China, which I don't believe. This means that China has far more nuclear weapons than is officially acknowledged. And perhaps this is because they don't want to spook the population here. There are attempts, it appears, to prevent people from realizing the reality of how bad it is, because they don't want to trigger any panic. And they understand that certain types of panic are not going to be conducive towards combating what they believe to be the essential threat. I mean, if you want to know what it's going to look like when, right before we get to that point, just take a look at Ukraine. That is the blueprint in terms of the rights that they don't have. That is the blueprint for what's going to happen here. Every single thing that happened there will happen here. Mark my words. Mind you, we're probably not going to be able to have bragging rights, because there's going to be no internet to brag about it on. Just checking my notes here to make sure I covered everything today. Gold, highest closing price in history. No big deal. Unprecedented after unprecedented. The frequency and the intensity of the unprecedented events, it reaches this crescendo. And as it does reach that point, that's when you know Day X is approaching. And it's not even anything hypothetical. It's something that is is historically precedented. It is something that is inevitable, just mathematically speaking, and from a game theory point of view. You have two powers competing for resources. One is about to be insurmountably powerful, so in an attempt to prohibit and deter them from progressing any further, you got to declare war with them now, which is what United States and Israel are trying to do to Iran, because they know Iran is about to achieve escape velocity with its nuclear program, with its relations that it has with the rest of the world. They know they're almost there, so they have to prevent that. So they have to create this confluence of conditions that make it look as though Iran is the aggressor. I mean, this bullshit about how we got to have peace negotiations before the 15th. Well, they just assassinated. I mean, and this is the Orwellian brainwashing. They just assassinated the guy who was the chief negotiator. If you ever wanted to negotiate, you would have negotiated with this guy. Now, you might say, well, he was hindering the progress of these peace talks. Well, the guy who is now taking up the reins is in fact a far more hardliner. He's in the tunnels of Gaza as we speak, despite false claims that he wants to negotiate for peace. And even if he does, it's the conditions that they are requiring are never going to be met by the Israelis. You got a lot of back and forth amidst the Israeli war cabinet with Gallant and what's his face? The guy who is worshipped in the United States, Netanyahu. You have them now pretending to fight, and I believe that's what it is. There could be some reality to it in that Gallant just doesn't want to be there anymore, and he sees that it's a shitty situation that is, he doesn't want to have his name on it when shit does finally hit the fan. But It appears as though just the classic good cop, bad cop thing going on there. So that's pretty much it. I wanted to explain this concept of Day X because I'm going to refer to it more and more. And I've been noticing too, like, I don't know, I introduce a lot of these concepts that are co-created by myself and other people I know. And I just want to put this one out there because I have a feeling that this nomenclature is going to become more and more popular in the days going forward. People call it the zero day, the zero hour. But I think understanding Day X in the way that I've explained it to you today, I hope that it's going to be useful in conceptualizing why we prep, why there is just this frenetic move towards preparedness that we're seeing from everybody across the socioeconomic spectrum. Let me know what you think about the theory of Day X, and really not a theory, just the historical precedent of Day X, and if there is anything else you think there is to add to this conversation that would be an example that would either, you know, support or reject the theory. Just called it a theory when I didn't. Anyways, guys, let me know in the comment section below if you want to get, if you want to support the channel, go get yourself a Prepared AF shirt from CanadianPreparedness.com. But before you buy t-shirts, stock up on preps, okay? T-shirts aren't going to save you. Yes, they are very comfortable and they're not your run-of-the-mill t-shirt. We had these manufactured by a Canadian company and the usual quality we like to aspire to. There are some that are less screaming, I'm a prepper and I'm preparing for Day X, although I might have to now make a website called Day X because you know somebody's going to commandeer that web domain if it's not already. I'm pretty sure all of the Day Anythings are probably owned by somebody squatting in his mama's basement. But just like CanadianPrepper.com, you can go fuck yourself, you know who you are. Thanks for watching, guys. You take care. Canadian Prepper out. And sorry to end on a note. I'm not talking about you guys going and fuck yourself. I'm talking about the guy who's cyber squatting on the domain, CanadianPrepper.com. Thanks for watching, folks. Take care.